As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Show and our latest fresh batch of listener questions. Today, we're finding out more about new Tottenham coach Ange Postecoglou. We're asking whether the Nations League is a thing we should care about, and we're heading into the TSS prank time machine. Yes, that is a thing. Woo! My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man who's apparently spent most of his waking hours this week catching up with the TV show Succession, Taylor Waystar Rockwell. Hello.
Hello, I'll take that as a middle name. It's better than Logan. Is it Kendall Logan Roy is named after his father? Either way, yes, I've been enjoying Succession because we're bringing back an old tradition. We're doing a Succession 11 this week. I am not caught up. I don't know if I'll be caught up by the time we record. It's going to be a race against the clock. We'll see how delirious and inclined I am to yell obscenities when we record.
It will be the strongest challenge we've ever had not to swear on this podcast, I believe, Taylor.
I think we're going to lose that battle. I think there's going to be a lot of bleeps in that episode.
Taylor's just going to absorb the personality of one of the characters. Who are you going to be, Taylor, tomorrow? You're going to be Kendall. Just talk like, yeah, okay, yeah, right.
Okay. So, and very clearly enunciate every letter. Yeah, that's his style. No, I think there is no one to really want to be. No one is aspirational in that show. I think I default to my usual answer of Stewie. Stewie is the person I want to be from Succession. He seems to be the one that everybody likes, always has ideas, always has answers, and always keeps it moving, and does not humiliate himself publicly over and over again.
He looks good in the role, Nick. I'll give him that.
There's that too.
Colin is aspirational, by the way, Taylor, just so you know. The bodyguard.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know what you're aspiring to, Ryan, but it has felony attached. All right, anyway.
More on that on tomorrow's episode, on Thursday's episode, I should say. But joining us today, a man who is aboard the CONCACAF Champions Cup hype train. Sound the rebrand klaxon, Joe Lowry. Mew, 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 mew.
The CCC is here, folks. Woo. It's just what everyone thought was needed to fix the CONCACAF Champions League, is to change it to a different acronym. Honestly, though, it does make more sense than calling it the Champions League. Like, we just did the Cubs versus Leagues discussion last week, and CONCACAF, I guess, heard that and didn't want to take any chances, and now it is the CONCACAF Champions Cup. The rebrand is whatever. There is one bit that actually got me a little excited from that announcement. It's that the prize money for the winner is going from $500K to $5 million, which to a team like Manchester City is nothing, but to basically any team in this region is not nothing. So that was kind of buried beneath the color change and the name change and all the fun acronym stuff. But that actually kind of has me stoked.
The prize was $500,000?
I believe that is what John Arnold, wrote in his newsletter, which folks should go and read, getting CONCACAF'd.
Wow. We make fun of the League Cup for being like $250,000. That's shocking, but I am glad they're increasing it. That's good news.
Yep.
You've just made me realize that the acronym is CCC, Joe. If they have playoffs and it's the CCCP, that's very Soviet. They've gone with this direction. I'm quite concerned. joining us on this Listener Questions episode, a man who's getting very, very, very excited about the Messi to Miami rumors, Graham Ruffin, wearing his Inter Miami shirt as we record. Graham, first off, is it true that MLS are slashing the Weeby no sock budget to get this one done? Is that true?
They're pulling all sorts of levers, including that one. I think he's getting a chunk of the Apple TV money. I think he's getting some of Don Garber's brunch budget, so no more brunches in Portland for me. Yeah, I think MLS are just putting everything they've got into the Messi pot. I am, as you know, Ryan, I'm a lifelong Inter Miami fan, always have been. You may have read an article by me in The Guardian yesterday absolutely trashing them, but you actually just imagined that never happened at all. Go Miami.
Oh, good, good. That's good to hear. And I love the fact that, Graham, you are still literally dining off your brunch with Garber story.
That's where I fed the idea to him. Have you ever thought about, listen to this, signing the best player of all time? There you go. You can have that one on me. That's where it came from.
All right, Joe, we know you're on the CCCP Soviet hype train, but how about the Messi hype train? As we record, it looks like a deal is going to get done to bring Lionel Messi to MLS. He still could go a few other directions at this point, as we record. That might be different by the time this show is published, but exciting times.
It really is. Like, I kind of can't believe that it seems like this is happening. I tried to add a qualifier on there just to protect myself in case. It was Taylor Goss and I on the Tuesday show, and I basically just straight up said, I still think Messi not coming to Miami is the most likely outcome. And maybe hours after we'd finished, maybe not even hours, the report started to come in and The Athletic published a good piece on sort of what MLS is trying to do and what levers they're trying to pull Barcelona style to make this happen with some of the things that Graham mentioned. It's feeling more and more real. Basically every passing minute, I've been awake for about an hour and 45 minutes now, and I feel like a lot's happened in an hour and 45 minutes. So it's all crazy. I think this would be one of the most fun things that's ever happened to soccer in this country. And I, as I have been all along, would absolutely love for this thing to become a real thing.
It's just accelerated so quickly. So I saw that Athletic report last night. That report's by Paul, right?
It was Paul Tenorio, Felipe Cardenas, and Pablo Maurer.
Right. It's a very good read. I would recommend reading it. But even reading that report, and there's a lot of solid reporting in there, I was still of the opinion that the play from Jorge Messi, who is Messi's father, who's doing the kind of negotiations for Messi, was to essentially have three agreed contracts on the table for Messi to choose from. That was what I thought. So the way that Athletic piece was reported was MLS are solidifying details for a transfer for Messi, and that to me read differently to they're close to signing him. But today, the story seems to have shifted entirely, and you've got Guillaume Balague saying that Messi has chosen Inter Miami. So maybe that has happened. Maybe Jorge Messi has had the kind of three offers on the table now, and he's agreed with three different parties, and Messi has picked the one he likes, which is Inter Miami. He has a place in Miami. Maybe not so surprising. Lots of space for that giant dog of his to roam around. So if it comes to pass, I'm excited to see him in MLS. I think I'm surprised at how excited I am, and I think the explanation for that is I was resigned to him going to Saudi Arabia. That's what I thought was going to happen. So the fact that it looks like that's not going to happen is pleasing to me.
And it's crazy. And I believe also this morning it was announced that N'Golo Kanté is going to Saudi Arabia for $100 million a season. Like it just felt like between Benzema, who we talked about recently, and Kanté and Ronaldo kind of starting that train in a high-profile way, it kind of felt like these offers just weren't being turned down. Like if Saudi Arabia wanted you and wanted to spend nine figures on you, you were probably going to go. But maybe that's no longer true. Graham, I think you're right. It's almost this disbelief that someone would turn that down, given the amount of money involved and given that Saudi Arabia and Messi do have some genuine ties together. I still kind of can't believe that it feels like this is going to become something real and tangible. It's going to be a bigger circus than I think any of us can possibly imagine, like a bigger circus than Zlatan, a bigger circus than Henri or Beckham or anything. Like this is going to be something that we've never seen before, ever. Like a player of Messi's caliber in Major League Soccer, which is a league that is so ridiculous and absurd so much of the time. Miami are so bad, and Graham, you are right to write that they were bad because they are horrendous. And we talked about that on yesterday's show. Like, it's just all so stupid, and it's beautiful, and I hope it happens.
that speaking of the circus, Joe, I actually looked because Charlotte FC's final home game, final game of the regular season, is hosting Inter Miami. So I'd look at tickets, which are
Messi's
already...
not playing on turf, bro. That's not gonna happen.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, the tickets were already around double the price of other match tickets.
That's
that
to pay for
out.
The real grass they're going to put down for that game.
Yeah,
that's good use of those money. That's a good thing.
Because probably teams like Charlotte will put down real grass to get Messi into town. I'm assuming, right? Right.
Yeah.
They did it for
champion, whatever that was called, ICC, right? Or
yeah.
Something
no,
like
they did
that.
It. Yeah. Chelsea played a friendly last year. Wow. They did it just for that as well.
That's like a ramification I never even thought about. And there's going to be maybe hundreds as high, but there's going to be dozens and dozens of those things that happen, and they happen just because Messi is here, because he will draw so many crowds. The one that I've thought of is, do we really think they're going to play in Derv Pink Stadium, like in Miami? I know it's not said like that, but I'm just going to say it like that because it's funny and they didn't put any vowels in the name.
Daft
and
Punk
they deserve
Stadium,
it.
I think is how you pronounce
in Daft Punk Stadium, thank you. It's 18,000 seats. Like, there's no way. Like, they're going to have to move everything over to Hard Rock Cafe Stadium, which will make Ryan Bailey very, very happy. Like, there are going to be so many logistical changes that they have to do to accommodate
the Messi
this.
Burger. Everything is aligning. I'm sorry, I just had to jump in there.
That's the perfect conclusion. I have nothing else to say.
Wow. Wonderful stuff. Yeah, I didn't even think about the home games. And Graham noting that Messi has property in Miami, which is, for what it's worth, nowhere near where Inter Miami play at the moment. That should be interesting. Taylor, any final thoughts on Messi before we move on to our LQs?
Yeah, what do we think is on the Messi burger? Because I'm assuming it reflects like Argentine flavors.
Why don't you look at patreon.com/totalsoccershow for the video of me eating one, Taylor? Why don't you do that?
Oh, I forgot that already exists. I'm now sad. I don't like this at all. There's going to be so many of these branded sponsorships, but that's, you know, the reason why I think they're able to make this deal happen.
Gotta pay the piper.
It's definitely going to help attendance. It's definitely going to help get more eyes on the league. I'm expecting a lot of people who... in my life who don't really care about soccer but know that I do, messaging me this afternoon to be like, Messi? ? So once those start coming in, you know that the big signing has happened.
Yeah, sorry, can I do one more bit? And I know we have like a bunch of questions.
Is it about the Messi burger? Because
it's all about the Messi burger. Yeah. Medium rare, baby. Good. All day long.
Then I'll allow it.
Yes, just insert Messi burger topic here. I wanted to say, this is all great and exciting for MLS, and I'm stoked about this. Like, I have a real chance to see Lionel Messi play in person. Selfishly, I think that's cool, and I probably wouldn't have gotten that chance if he was going anywhere else. So I'm thankful for that as someone who's in this space and someone who likes soccer. If MLS doesn't actually capitalize on this, and by that I mean not just enjoying the time that he's here, but making meaningful change to make the time when he's no longer here into something more than it was before he got here, this will have been a massive waste. Like that's MLS's focus. As soon as they get this deal over the line, and this deal should have been their biggest focus for the last however long now. Like, once that's done, and if it gets done and Messi is an Inter-Miami player, the focus then turns to how do we make this into something that is at least 5% sustainable? Like, how do we retain some of these people? If that doesn't happen, then this was all kind of a big flashy waste of everybody's time.
All right, more on this story on the feed as we get news on it. But in the meantime, we're going to get to our listener questions. Before we do, one more time, patreon.com/totalsoccershow to check out our bonus content, including the Messi burger, as tested in Messi's former home of Paris by yours truly. Also answered a listener question from Jen Ahern. Listener Jen Ahern's question I answered on the Patreon this week. And Graham trolled me with his lovely tier one Starbucks that's opened within walking distance of his home, which is basically... if I'm looking for a new home, I want walking distance Starbucks, and yeah, you're a very lucky man, Graham.
I don't even care that much about it. that's the hurtful thing for you.
All right, Taylor, Joe, let's carry on with the listener questions, shall we? Just the three of us. Kevin Tolley has been in touch. It's the start of silly season, says Kevin. I was wondering, how do you tell a real rumor from a stupid one? On the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish, there was a special guest who plays Jamie Tart in Ted Lasso. Phil Dunster, that will be. And there was a section on soccer. They referenced a transfer rumour from a 99 article in The Times that reported Liverpool were about to buy a footballer called Didier Baptiste. I haven't heard that name in a while. Apparently, this was completely bogus and made up, but made it into a respectable paper such as The Times. Taylor, If The Times cannot fact check, how are we supposed to gosh darn do it?
Yeah. Another example of that before I give my answer. One of my favorite ones is when Reddit decided they were going to create a transfer rumor to see if it gets picked up. The one they landed on was when Zlatan moved to PSG. The rumor they created was that he was then going to be loaned to Monaco because the rule had to be. It was so ridiculous that there's no chance it was being reported elsewhere. It had ever existed before. And sure enough, it got a bunch of traction and got reported around the world as PSG in a way to like alleviate some of the financial penalty. We're going to loan him to Monaco. So when people want to believe a story, when they want to believe a thing is happening or not happening, or a team is going to do something stupid, I think there's always going to be rumor. Telling it to be true is very tricky. Graham and I did a Soccer 101 about this last week that has not yet been published because I got sick and it did not get published, but it will be today. And that one is all about sort of transfer rumor speculation, where it comes from, that it's increased, is it as big as it's ever been, but then ways to sort of spot truth or spot inconsistency in the story. The two that I would say with, one, I am straight up stealing from Graham, so sorry Graham, I'm saying it before you can, is that does it have a reputable author attached? Is it one individual person reporting the story, or is it staff? Is it the Times staff or the Athletic staff? Then that can be a little bit more nebulous, whereas if it's one person who has a connection to the club or the player, whatever it may be, I think right there, you know. And then when you read the article itself, is it a person reporting something that they have heard, something that they have been told, something they've been briefed on, or is it a person writing about a story they read with a link to that story? And when you click that link sends you to a different link and then a different link, and then it ends up on a random gossip site. That's where you know, okay, so we're just kind of following rumors and not having it based in anything reality.
Okay, so Graham, what if it's, say, an Italian who says, here we go, and he puts a Photoshop picture of a player in a shirt on his Twitter feed?
Oh, you're referring to Romano, right? Fabrizio Romano. I think he's pretty solid.
No, just a random example.
We named names in our Soccer 101 episode. We went through
who
are the good and the bad. We didn't name the bad ones, but we did
There were some allusions made.
Yeah. Romano's tier one. I think he's pretty well connected. Interestingly enough, I did go through his Twitter feed today when all the Messi stuff was coming out. He doesn't seem to actually have that story, which is notable in itself. Say that again?
Here we don't go, sorry.
Here we don't go, yeah. I agree with everything that Taylor has said about the kind of signs you can look for in a transfer story. I also think the sign that you can look for that tells you that maybe there's not that much weight to a story is according to reports, which essentially means we have read this on Twitter and we have now written an article about this, and this is to scrape SEO traffic from Google. That's my reading of that, and the reason that I kind of know that is because, to my shame, in earlier in my career, I have written stuff like that where begrudgingly I've had to do it to, you know, earn money and pay the bills and stuff like that. Thankfully, don't have to do that anymore. So I kind of have had an insight into how the sausage is made. It's pretty grisly at times, but there are some ways to decipher what is real and what maybe isn't so real.
Yeah, definitely so. And listen to that Soccer 101 episode, listener, for more details on exactly that. I'll say, Graham, I also have seen how the sausage is made. In fact, you and I on Bleach Report back in the day used to talk transfer rumors quite a lot. So I've done that side of things, and I've worked for a soccer team and also work in soccer PR. So you kind of get the sense that it all basically is a machine. It's a bit of a game. It's more managed by clubs and agents than you think. You know, the press get happy because they get content. Agents get their deal publicized. Clubs leak players, their availability to stir interest. And us rubes, we just lap it all up. That's basically how it works. Yeah.
Which is, I think, one of the conclusions we came to is if you enjoy transfer rumors, if you enjoy the transfer window, which I think most of us do, I don't know, but I do. But I think also that's because I try not to put too much stock into reports. And so I will have friends. Genuinely, I promise I'm not talking about myself. I used to do this, but I have friends who get like so angry and be like, what are they doing? This is so dumb. And it's like, it's a rumor. Calm down. Like when it's official, when the player's holding up the jersey, and even then, sometimes not then, but when they're on the pitch doing some keepy uppies, that's when you know it's happened. That's when you can get really frustrated. But until then, I think it's best to treat them all with a grain of salt. But then a thing I can imagine Joe doing is sort of looking at the transfer rumor and thinking, well, how would this work? Would this player fit with the team? Do they fit the style? They don't fit the style. That doesn't make much sense. So I think you can look at the rumor and still pull away useful information without getting caught up in the, like, is it happening? Is it not happening? What's going on? What's the latest? And sort of driving yourself crazy a little bit.
And I will add to that, just because you see a rumor and it doesn't make sense doesn't mean that it won't happen either.
Like,
this
true.
Is part of the game I do try to think about that stuff. Like, you know, does this move make sense? Oftentimes, people just do things that aren't smart, or they just do things that don't make sense, and they do it because they think it's a good idea, and it's really not. I think there are a lot of people that make bad decisions in and around the soccer world, and I don't think there's a lot of evidence that we need to actually bring out.
Yeah, the messy burger.
For people
to
understand that's a real thing.
That's my MO. Doing things that aren't smart is what I do, Joe. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is fair. My actual hack for this is just, like, find some reporters that you trust and follow them on Twitter. Like, I'm a lot better at that stuff in American soccer moves and news than European stuff, just because that's the stuff that I overdose on more than anything else. But, like, learn those people, and if you don't know them, I'm happy to provide them for you. I've talked long enough. That's my hack.
I kind of want to do this as an experiment. Do you think TSS can create her own transfer rumor? Joe, you do it. I bet you tweeted.
No way.
If you tweeted a random MLS player is going to random Premier League club, Crystal Palace, I reckon that is on a tabloid website within 12 hours.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, which is the scary thing. And that's probably the best example out of all of this is, like, it's really easy to make this stuff up. And there are a lot of folks that talk with some people for sure, and those people probably don't know as much as they should, or are just totally using them, and then they get hosed over and over and over again and never seem to learn because we all love the clicks.
I feel like we could do this pretty convincingly, though. Now you've got the wheel spinning, Graham, because I'm thinking, like, Cade Cowell was impressed by Patrick Vieira's time in Major League Soccer as a manager, and though Vieira has left Crystal Palace, he remains convinced by the project as it continues on, and wants to learn from Wilfried Zaha and could, like, up his game along those lines. Like,
there's something
here. There's a lot of ways that you can make this rumor make sense. Yeah.
I'll do it. Right. Musk already took my blue tick. I've got nothing to lose.
There you go. Integrity be darned. Graham's going to do it. Very good. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mr. Ange Postecoglou and much more. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our listener questions. Mark Bajarski has been in touch. A question specifically for Graham, but I think we can all have a go at this one. Do you think Ange Postecoglou would be a good fit for Tottenham Hotspur? I remember, Graham, you were pretty high on him when he came to Celtic. Do you think he'll be successful in the Premier League? I'll say, Graham, that the response from the media and podcasts and whatnot that I've heard for Postecoglou coming to Spurs so far has been uniformly positive. Lots of people very excited about this move.
From the people you should listen to, yes, I have heard some talk sporty stuff and YouTube channel-y stuff, which has trotted out the old kind of tired, ignorant lines about Ange Postecoglou. So let me qualify this first before I answer this question. Spurs are Spurs, right? They broke Antonio Conte. He is a broken man now. So, you know, there's no guarantees with Tottenham. But let's just say Daniel Levy gets out of Postecoglou's way. I think he's more than a good appointment for Spurs. In fact, I think he's an excellent appointment for Spurs. He won 5 trophies out of 6 at Celtic, and I know the argument there is that other managers have had similar success at Celtic. I've seen people say, well, you know, Ronnie Dyla and Neil Lennon, they were never linked with big Premier League jobs when they were successful at Celtic. That's precisely the point. When you use an analytical eye to look at Postecoglou, you can see what it is that makes him different. His brand of football is fantastic to watch, and exactly the sort of thing that you know, Spurs fans have been desperate for: attack-minded, possession-based, very modern, very exciting football. It's not quite the same as Pochettino football, but there's an easier. You can see a progression from Pochettino to Postecoglou. That's difficult to say. Much better than you can see, you know, Conte and Mourinho and Nuno and all those guys. There was no common thread between, you know, Pochettino and those guys. So I think he's exactly the sort of He's going to bring the type of football that Spurs fans want. You'll also hear stuff about he doesn't know English football and he's only worked in Scotland and Japan and Australia, and that's the sort of thing I've heard on TalkSport this week. This is a guy who's had to work his way up. So yes, you could just hire Frank Lampard, right, because he knows English football, or you could get someone who has a wealth of professional and life experience and has been exposed to different ideas and cultures. He worked with City Football Group in Japan as manager Yokohama. He's managed an international team in Australia. He's coached at a World Cup as well. So just because he doesn't have Premier League experience doesn't mean that he doesn't have experience at all. Spurs fans also, they want a manager who they'll like as a person, right? They didn't like Mourinho. They didn't like Nuno. Well, they hardly got to know Nuno. And towards the end, they certainly didn't like Antonio Conte. They're going to love Big Ange. That's one thing I am really confident on. He'll fight for them. He'll take no nonsense. He'll galvanize them as a fan base. And nobody's really done that at Spurs since Poch was there. Spurs don't have a sporting director at the moment, and for most managers that would be a bit of an issue. Postecoglou at Celtic, that's the structure he worked in there, and Celtic basically just told him to use all his knowledge to identify players, and then the club went and got them. So I think that makes Postecoglou's departure for Celtic disastrous, because he is basically their entire front office as well. But for Spurs in their current state, it's very good news that they now have someone like that. He's adaptable. As I said, at Yokohama, he kind of played under City Football Group, so he added a whole load of new ideas into how he plays. That's where he started playing inverted fullbacks. And it might take some time for some of his ideas to take root. It did at Celtic. He didn't start off that well. I think he lost his first two games. But once he got going, there was absolutely no stopping him. So, yes, there's no guarantee of success for any manager, particularly at a Big Six club and also particularly at Spurs. But I do think he has the potential to be the manager that Spurs have been looking for a long time. I'm really high on the appointment.
It seems to me that there's a non-zero chance that Postecoglou is Tottenham's Jurgen Klopp. Like, I think there are certain connections there, managers that have very clear ideas, managers that are coming from different leagues that have different backgrounds to sort of the classic English managers that get run through over and over and over again. Graham, you mentioned Frank Lampard there. I think that's a good one on the opposite side of the spectrum. You know, he knows exactly how he wants to play. He knows the kinds of players he wants. They play really fun soccer, and Graham, you detailed some of that stuff, like time in the City Football Group kind of gives people an idea of what this team will look like if they didn't catch any Celtic or didn't listen to Graham talk at all about that team throughout the last year or so. I really like this appointment. I think it is absolutely a risk worth taking for Tottenham. I think there's a lot that Spurs fans will like. The thing that I want to make sure we lay out, and this is the same thing that I said about Erik ten Hag and Manchester United. Graham, you said it's going to take time and mentioned that, you know, he lost his first two games at Celtic. It's going to take years. Like, this is a process now. And the question for Tottenham is, are they going to be willing to wait? Are they going to be willing to suffer and to go through points where people are angry and irritated because Postecoglou hasn't fixed everything? But it's going to take time, both for the coaching ideas to stick, because they haven't been playing this way. Like, these players haven't done a lot of this stuff. Some of them have, right? And they've been at different clubs that want the ball and all that jazz. But a lot of them haven't, right? You think about Bentancur in midfield. It's not really his thing, right? It's not really his way of playing. So that's one side of this. The other side is, it's not just the coaching part that's going to take time. Graham, you wisely mentioned the sporting director's side and the signings. This roster is just straight up not built to play his way. It's not built to play in this really expansive 4-3-3, wide wingers, 8.5 spaces, left back, maybe tucked in a little bit inside, right back inside at times, overlapping at other times.
Listeners, this is producer Taylor jumping in to say that Graham has been nodding the entire time Joe is talking.
Yes.
Just pointing that out.
I'm glad that's the case. So, like, they're not built to do that. So it's not just going to take time for these players to understand the ideas. It's going to take time for Postecoglou to weed through the squad, to go out, identify the right players, bring them in over the next... I mean, what have we talked about it with Manchester United? 4 transfer windows, something like that? Like, it's going to take transfer window after transfer window after transfer window. So, Graham, my question to you is, do you think Tottenham will be patient? Like, are they willing with this appointment to say, all right, we didn't go get Nagelsmann. We didn't go get someone that we think maybe could fix it right now, even though I don't think that's true. Like, we went for someone who's slightly more under the radar, although he's still a big name, and we're going to wait. Like, is that going to happen? Or is everybody going to get really hissy about it? They're going to finish 6th and everybody's going to complain and he's going to get fired and it's all going to be a waste of time.
I mean, the truth is there is I don't know, you know, because I obviously don't know Daniel Levy. His track record of the last few years suggests maybe Postecoglou won't get that patience. But the fact that they've gone for Ange Postecoglou, who is as great an appointment as I think that is, you couldn't ever really argue that it's an easy crowd-pleasing appointment, right? It's not. He's not a big name who's won big European trophies. He's not Luis Enrique. He's not
Nagelsmann
even,
would have been
Julian
a bigger
Nagelsmann.
Name in terms of hiring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the easy appointment here for Spurs is Pochettino, right? They just go straight out the gate when they sack Conte and they go and get Pochettino, who I still think would have taken the Spurs job over Chelsea. We'll never truly know, but that's my hunch. So the fact that they have looked to someone like Postecoglou says that there has been a little bit of a shift in ethos and approach, and maybe he will get that time, and he will need that time. You're right, Joe. I think Celtic, it's easier to build a winning team in Scotland because obviously you're only really competing against Rangers. But even using that measure, I think everyone was shocked at how quickly things came together for him at Celtic. And I don't know if he's going to be able to replicate that, where he brought in 16 new players and I think something like 12 of them, you would say, were a big success. Spurs probably aren't going to have that hit rate. And also in his first season at Celtic, there was a feature in, I remember talking about this on the show, there was a feature in Celtic's games, in Celtic's performances, where after the 60-minute mark, they would fall off a cliff in terms of their intensity and energy. And that said to me that there was a process in terms of fitness and being able to implement that pressing style that Celtic needed some time. Even as they were winning games and winning titles, they needed some time to get up to full speed. So I expect a similar sort of thing with Spurs. I have questions over even Harry Kane, right? I think if Kane stays at Spurs, Postecoglou's going to have to integrate him into his team. But if you look at someone like Kyogo Furuhashi, who is Celtic's number nine, he is an absolute pressing machine. It's one of his main features in that team is to close down the goalkeeper. He anticipates back passes. He forces opposition defences into clearing the ball out of play. And I just don't really envisage Kane doing that. So even if Kane stays, there's maybe going to have to be a compromise there for Postecoglou. And he has changed his style over the course of his managerial career. He's used, 4-3-3. He's used back threes in the past. So he does have that adaptability to find new solutions. But yeah, this is going to be the start of a process for Spurs.
Graham, are we going to get any signings from Celtic to Spurs? If there were one player who was going to make that jump, CCV has already been at Tottenham, lest we forget.
Yeah, CCV in a back three would be interesting. We haven't really seen him in a back three for Celtic. I know Spurs.
I don't really think it will be CCV, but
no, it won't be CCV.
I had to get that one in there. But yeah, are there any other people that you think like he might bring, or is it going to be more of a renewal for him?
So the three Celtic players that I think are good enough for that level are Kyogo, who I think is sensational. Mm. I think he plays in the Premier League easily. Whether he starts ahead of Harry Kane, though, is another matter. So maybe that's a succession plan.
That would be controversial.
It would. So maybe not
also
something there.
Also might not be an issue, given how the next few weeks go as well.
Exactly. There could be something there. Rio Hatate, central midfielder, Japanese central midfielder, is also very good, very young as well, so time for him to improve. And then Felipe Jota, who is a Portuguese winger. So those are the three players I think Celtic have that are good enough for kind of Spurs level. Whether he raids Celtic for his former players, I'm not so sure.
All right, Mark, thank you very much for that question. We go to Balogun's dog.
Joe
Balogun's dog. Remind me, says Balogun's dog, why am I supposed to care about the Nations League? This is the competition that replaced friendlies, right? My thinking is FIFA can market it however they like, but they're still just friendlies, except the US is taking a stronger squad to the Nations League than to the Gold Cup, which, for better or worse, is still our regional championship. What gives, says Balogun's dog, Taylor. Next Thursday, we have the CONCACAF Nations League games. We have Panama taking on Canada and the US taking on Mexico, of course, in glorious Las Vegas. I suppose, yeah, Taylor, why should we care about this contest?
It's a fair question. There's a couple explanations for me. Starting with, I do not care about friendlies. I think international managers definitely don't care about friendlies, and yet fan bases, at least US fan bases, often do. And I think put a lot of weight behind them when they're meant to be exactly what they're called, friendlies. They're meant to be experimental opportunities that don't really matter. But as a result, they're never really that engaging to me. I'm never really that excited for the international window when it's two friendlies and then we're back to the league structure. But with the Nations League, sure, you could say it's a glorified version of friendlies. I would say it's still a competitive series of games where you're playing towards winning some silverware at the end. And I think if you take any athlete and say, yeah, we're going to play some pickup or we're going to have a little scrimmage, they're going to try, but they're not going to try that hard. If you say we're playing in a tournament, even if it's only three or four games, I think they're going to be up for it. There's going to be that level of competition. And with that comes an actual opportunity to experiment, try new tactics, learn new things, learn what your players are capable of. So I think in that way, it automatically raises the entertainment value, for me at least. Second to that, the Nations League, as I understand it, in CONCACAF specifically, started to basically give smaller countries in the Confederation more opportunities to play meaningful competitive games, with the idea that rising tide lifts all boats, everybody gets more opportunities to play, everybody gets a little bit more money, and hopefully the quality of the Confederation increases as well. And finally, for me, it's basically that the Nations League is a smaller Gold Cup, that you're playing the group stage games, you've got a home and away versus two opponents, then you've got the semifinal, then the final. And you're mostly interested, short of like maybe some hiccups along the way, who you play in the semifinal and then making it to the final and playing there, which is not dissimilar from the Gold Cup. It's pretty much always U.S. on one side of the bracket, Mexico on the other. Maybe there's an upset along the way. But short of that, we're going to be waiting until the semis to really get into it. And so I feel like the Nations League sort of distills that down to a smaller semi more bite-sized, because it is spread out, obviously. But I think having these two games that are against the strongest opposition in the Confederation is pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I would... Sorry, Ryan. I was just going to say to Balogun's Dog, which is an incredible username here. If you think these are glorified friendlies, I would just encourage you to go back and watch the U.S.-Mexico Nations League final from 2021. True. Because that was maybe one of the best games of soccer I've ever seen in my life, and it was very apparent that not a single player on that field or near that field or person in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas thought it was a glorified friendly. You have people throwing stuff. Yeah. You've got Christian Pulisic doing crazy stuff. You've got, Ethan Horvath coming off the bench and saving penalty. Like, that was one of the wildest games that I've ever seen, one of the best soccer games that I've ever witnessed, certainly from the USMNT standpoint. Like, these are games that people care about. Like, these are games that the players and the federations care about, which means they won't feel like friendlies. Also, they're not policed as friendlies. Like, they're real soccer games in a tournament kind of style. So I really struggle with thinking of them as glorified friendlies, even if they replace them. I think they replace them with something new that has the feeling of something new. So that's my major point here, is like, these are likely to be kind of wild or at least entertaining games. That's not guaranteed. And they probably won't be as good as last time around, but I wouldn't compare them to friendlies by a long shot.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Graham, I think we've had this conversation before about the Nations League format in general. I think I was certainly quite cynical when it came out in UEFA. But then sort of it generally came to mean that, so say for an England fan, it meant you got quite good opposition in these friendly windows, what were previously friendly windows. Instead of games against Andorra or San Marino, you get these quite high-level opposition in this group stage of the Nations League, as well as the later stages as well. And I prefer that to say, like, even like a money spinner friendly against Brazil, for example, because there is a bit of a competitive edge to it. But I suppose a criticism, Graham, is that when you were in Nations League and they are occupying those international windows, your teams aren't playing teams from outside your federation anymore. So you will tend to start playing the same teams a little bit more, if that's fair to say.
And I think that has been a complaint, certainly, of the South American teams after the creation of the UEFA Nations League, is now that competition denies them the chance to test themselves against the European teams specifically. And I did see some people, I mean, obviously Argentina won the whole damn thing in Qatar, but Brazil afterwards, there were some people saying that their friendly schedule maybe hadn't prepared them for the tournament in the way that they would have liked. Taylor and Joe have obviously spoken to why US fans should care about the Nations League. I am going to look at it kind of as a whole, and I have to compare it to the UEFA Nations League because I think I can provide some context, hopefully. So I'm obviously a Scotland fan, as I think I've mentioned in the past, and Nations League fixtures are some of the biggest fixtures that we play, and that's not because of the competitive merit of the Nations League, it's because it's usually our best way to qualify for the Euros. So they're qualifiers for us, qualifiers against teams of equal quality. And if you're a country that qualifies with ease through the normal process, that maybe doesn't really matter as much to you. You don't need that secondary qualification route. So that's maybe why there's some apathy for the Nations League from England, whereas Scotland and Wales and the smaller countries treat them as big games. And in the CONCACAF Nations League, I think the US in this context are England, right? They don't, I mean, I know the US
oh,
missed out
they?
In 2018.
But the US is, I know that they're in like the top tier of their Nations League competition. I'm assuming England is as well, right? They didn't get relegated out of theirs,
did they?
Yeah,
that's right. They? Yeah, don't check it, but that's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, we're talking about, you know, old England, tier one England, you know, new England,
tier
two England.
Okay.
I was just thinking that, Ryan. It's gotten so much run.
Yeah, we're talking about a different England. But speaking broadly, the US or England, you know, they don't generally need another route to qualify for the Gold Cup, which is, as I'm led to believe, what the Nations League also serves as a qualification for the Gold Cup. So for the smaller nations, it's similar to Scotland, right? And that's what gives these matches for them. You know, it's not all about the US and Mexico and Canada. That's what gives these fixtures kind of competitive merit.
Wonderful stuff. All right.
I'm just going to keep derailing things. Only to add that I don't think this has been said, so it is worth noting. And because it's an official competition, you can cap tie players, which is another important thing. If you're the United States and you're constantly going after dual nationals, then you can get them committed to your national team by playing in the Nations League, whereas obviously friendlies did not.
How appropriate for Balogun's dog.
Yeah.
Very nice indeed. And Balogun's dog, you know, are you supposed to care about a Nations League? You can make your own mind up. We're not here to tell you what you should care about or not. There's plenty of soccer out there, so you're welcome to do so. Taylor.
Do clubs help you, if you have a dog and you are a player, like do clubs help you find a dog sitter for when you have to go abroad? I'm now fascinated by this idea. If Balogun truly does have a dog and he's going to the Nations League, is there somebody who's helping him take a dog
care
sitter?
Of it, for sure.
You
Arsenal
think so?
Taking care of it. Yeah,
do they have a kennel? Are there Arsenal kennels? I need to know this.
MLS
so you
has
do
just
know
bought...
this isn't actually his dog writing the question. You know that, right?
I don't know that. You can't convince me of that.
Neither do I. I don't know that either, to be fair. Yeah.
I choose to live in a dream fantasy world. Thank you, Ryan. Graham, you were saying that MLS has now bought a gigantic kennel, I'm assuming?
Well, a condo, I think, for Messi's dog. That's one of the levers.
Chuck Blazer style. Having an apartment for just his cats. There we go. Yeah,
exactly.
Maybe in the Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, Florida, which might even be midway between Miami and Fort Lauderdale, if my math is correct. Maybe Giant Dog has a suite there.
Is this an advertorial?
It could feel that way.
It could be. Hit us up, Hard Rock. It could be indeed. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got plenty more, including... why Nottingham Forest used to be good, why Greek Super League used to be good, and other stuff. Back shortly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our listener questions. Seymour Bale has been in touch and asks, how did Nottingham Forest win back-to-back Champions Leagues? As an 18-year-old Canadian who's interested in soccer, and whose interest in soccer is quite recent, excuse me, I find this very confusing considering their current state. So Nottingham Forest, of course, have the two stars on their crest. They won the European Cup, now known as the Champions League, in 1979 and 1980. They won the league, the English league, in the year before, in 1978. Graham, they were a powerhouse under the management of Graham Clough and Peter Taylor in the late 70s and early 80s. Is the short answer here, team was good, now not good anymore?
Yeah, or the fact that Nottingham Forest didn't sign 30 different players every summer and that actually allowed them to build a functional team. And they won the European Cup twice, as you say, Ryan. No, the answer is Brian Clough. He was one of the greatest managers of his generation. If you look at his story and where he started at Forest and where he took them. It's quite remarkable. So they were in the second division when he took over. They won promotion in his first season, and then they won the first division title, which is the equivalent of the Premier League, in his second season, and the League Cup as well. So Clough is credited with being one of English football's greatest ever managers. I also believe he was credited with being one of English football's first true tacticians. So until him, it had sort of been about sticking a team out in the 4-4-2 shape, and that was it for the match. But Clough would actually make changes to shapes and things like that during the matches, which obviously we take for granted now, like that every manager in football does that. But that wasn't very common then, at least not in English football at that time. And the greater context, I guess, is that in the 80s, there was more mobility at the top of the sport. So there wasn't the same amount of money in football. You could build a team and rise pretty quickly if you had a good manager and a good group of players, which is what Forest had. And also the European Cup was winners of leagues only and straight knockouts. So you had more variance there as well. And if you look at the finalists around that time that Forest won the European Cup twice, you'll see all sorts of names. You'll see, you know, Liverpool, maybe not so surprising them, Forest, Saint-Étienne, Leeds, Stade Bucharest, Hamburg, Club Bruges, Malmo. So it wasn't this sort of cabal of clubs that just compete against each other season after season like we have now in the Champions League. So yeah, that's pretty much the reason that it was a little bit easier to rise and also to fall, which is what Nottingham Forest did ultimately when Clough left. And he is a true kind of English football legend.
Yeah, I suppose maybe take for an 18-year-old soccer fan, it might be hard to imagine a time when there weren't a cabal of very powerful clubs who won everything and who were consistently at the top of the game in Europe. So there were opportunities for a team like Nottingham Forest to make a run.
Bayern Munich's been around. Bayern Munich have been doing Bayern Munich things since a good long while. But yes, I think Graham nailed it there, especially with the lack of money the way we have it today. So there was more mobility in the standings. I also think, Graham, I don't know if you did that on purpose, but saying that he's one of England's greatest ever managers makes me smile because he has the famous quote. I wouldn't say I'm one of the great, like, I'm not the greatest manager, but I am in the top one. What the quote is? Something like that. Yeah. Clough has some great quotes, a lot of them about how great he is. But I think he is definitely the answer. I think also looking at some of his tactics feels like he was more European-centric at a time when clubs were maybe more hoof it long, route one, fast and physical, that sort of thing, wanted his teams to have the ball, was okay with playing on the counter, had teams very disciplined, very well organized, as cliche as that may sound, to the point where I think he had financial penalties for players disrespecting the referee because he wanted them so focused on the play itself and not getting distracted by anything else. And so I think him having complete control of that team and still having the respect, obviously it goes poorly at Leeds, but prior to that, much success with Derby. So I think still has that, like, the reputation coming in and then has a point to prove, a chip on the shoulder from what happened with Leeds, that I think he is so focused on molding this team into being greater than the sum of its parts. He does just that, and they win back-to-back Champions Leagues, which is no small feat for sure.
Yeah. I think he was also ahead of his time in terms of the sort of cult of personality around him.
Yeah.
He was Mourinho before Mourinho was Mourinho, right? Yeah. And that was, I mean, there may have been some examples that I haven't heard of, but to my mind, he was one of the first in English football, or the first in English football, to be like that. So players would want to play for him because of the personality that he was. And obviously that's become commonplace in football now with Mourinho and Klopp and Guardiola, but Clough was, he started a trend there.
He did indeed. Yeah, and for more information, as Taylor mentioned, about his time at Leeds, The Damn United is a movie you can check out, the Michael Sheen and book as well. And his son, Nigel Clough, by the way, is a manager now. When I was last back in London and I saw a Wimbledon game, he was managing Mansfield Town. He still is. And he is quite an active one on the sidelines.
To Graham's point about Mourinho, tell me these two quotes couldn't be said by Jose Mourinho. They are, in fact, Brian Clough quotes. Rome wasn't built in a day, but I wasn't on that particular job. That feels like Jose Mourinho could say that about his time in Rome. And then, if I had an argument with a player, we would sit down for 20 minutes, talk about it, and then decide that I was right. That also sounds very Jose Mourinho. So I think there was that, cult of personality for sure with Brian Clough.
Wonderful stuff. What a legend. R.I.P. Brian Clough. Thank you, Seymour, for that question. Indeed. We go to Ben Sundstrom. By the way, Graham, nice fact for you. In their run to their first European Cup title, Nottingham Forest beat AEK Athens 7-2 in the first round. I'm sure you knew
that.
Yeah, you knew that already. I'm sure you watched the highlights earlier. But the segue being about this question from Ben Sundstrom. Not long ago, the Greek Super League was competitive in Europe and compared in quality to the Belgian, Portuguese and Turkish leagues. Olympiakos, AEK, PAOK and Panathinaikos were decent clubs that played in the Champions League. But now, not so much. So what's happened to soccer in Greece is Ben's question, Graham. Now, looking at the UEFA coefficients, Greece are now ranked 15th in Europe. Below Switzerland, below Serbia, Austria, even Scotland. I look back to around 2005-06. In that season, for example, they were 7th. That was when you'd see like Greek opposition against Man United on big days in the Champions League.
Yeah, and, I actually remember Man United playing Greek teams a lot around that time. Yeah, I don't know why that was, but Panathinaikos, I seem to remember about 6 Man United Panathinaikos games around then.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what made me think of Man United, because as you say, they always seem to be in Greece in that contest. But what's happened?
Yeah, so I found an Olivier Capo interview. He used to play in the Premier League. I think he used to play for Birmingham, maybe Wigan as well. And he played in Greece. And he gave this interview where he spoke about the corruption in the sport in Greece. He actually called it, quote, a total mafia. So that might be one factor. The money that comes in doesn't kind of go back into the sport. It goes into the pockets of people it shouldn't go into. Match fixing as well, I think, has been a problem. Capo said that in his interview that he'd been asked to fix a match, obviously refused to. There was also a report in 2015 which accused people in Greek football, the people that run Greek football, the clubs and the league, of, quote, initiating, participating in, and directing a criminal organization, fraud, attempted criminal extortion, and corruption. So that's not great. Those are not good things to accuse people running football of. And 6 years later, there was actually a court case that involved 28 key figures that ran Greek football. One of those people was the Nottingham Forest president, Evangelos Marankas, I think his name is. There was referees in there. There was several members of the Greek FA involved in that court case. Eventually, they were actually acquitted, so we should mention that. But yeah, nonetheless, there have been cases of violence across the years in Greek football, including when the PAOK president, Ivan Savidis, he walked onto the pitch during a game with a gun, again... is not ideal, not really what you want to see. So the point I'm making here is, to outside investors, Greek football isn't very attractive, I think, because of this culture. There is an inward reflection from people in Greek football that they need to clean this up, that this is a problem. And then you factor in a lack of investment in the sport in a country which, the economy just completely collapsed in the mid-2000s. So I think that has been a factor as well. So it's not been a great time for Greek football.
Yeah, I have on my list corruption, fan behavior, and financial issues, which Graham basically just hit all of there. Like, economic crisis that happened in Greece impacted soccer just like it impacted other industries and other people in Greece and even beyond. AEK Athens was relegated to the third division in 2013 after they went bankrupt. So that was sort of a cause there. Attendance figures have gone down. Money from TV deals goes down in financial crises, and revenues are low, so they're not able to spend the same amount of money on players and other soccer-y things that you need to run a club, like stadium upkeep and things like that. Fan behavior, Graham, you mentioned a lot of it. The one story that I read that really stuck with me was like people trying to blow up a referee in 2012. So I don't know if you all read any of this story or not, but basically a bomb exploded in a bakery oven back in 2012. And it was a referee that owned that bakery. It was a family business, his family business. And he was scheduled to ref the final, a game at least, between Olympiakos and another club a few days later. And basically a couple of people had come to see him, telling him that Olympiakos had to win that game. And they threatened him. And he apparently said he couldn't be bought. And soon after, a bomb goes off in his oven. So, like, that's the kind of stuff that had been happening. And some of those things, maybe not to that extreme, but do pop up periodically. And so, yeah, the cultural aspect of it is incredibly difficult. And some of these things you can tie back to the economic challenges that have existed in Greece for a while and were heightened certainly a few years ago. Like, those things and behavior and all these things are heavily impacted by the well-being of these individuals. And if your outlet for your life falling apart is soccer and you're going to take it out in this way, that's going to have wider ramifications for the sport in general and for the sport certainly across the country.
Yeah, I think probably, Taylor, the headline is the economic factor, as Joe mentioned there. Mm-hmm. Last decade, things have obviously been quite challenging in Greece, post-Olympics and the financial collapse they've had there. Also, like infrastructure-wise, Greece is like lots of tiny islands. So like to organize soccer across that also is challenging. It's not like the easiest terrain to have soccer played on, if that makes sense.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, that would be pretty tricky, which is maybe why there was the move from the deputy sports minister to reduce the size of the league. Maybe he wants to make it easier. But that is also a big part of it, is the intervention of the government as well. I think the league's been shut down multiple times. That is theoretically against FIFA bylaws. So I don't know if anything will come of that since that happened years ago. But I think that's kind of representative of a lot of what's already been talked about. Financial instability, fan unrest, and then just violence, I think, is a big part of it. And players, big name players. Rivaldo used to be there. I struggle to think of a sort of maybe slightly past their prime Brazilian, I was going to say that, and then I was thinking, well, I guess James was just there, but his contract was canceled. He's obviously not Brazilian. But I think you're just, it's harder to get those types of players at this point for Greek clubs because of everything that's happened in the last 5 or 6 years. I think things are improving slowly, but I think that's also been because there's been a focus on more domestic players. Even if the money still isn't there, I don't think that there's a league-wide TV deal. I think it's individual clubs. And so a few clubs in the top flight don't have TV deals or didn't at the start of the league this season. So I think situation improving, but definitely not back to where they were years ago.
Yeah. Well, there was a boost for one Greek club in 2008. I don't know if you remember the movie Step Brothers, and Rob Riggle's character, when he was talking about the Catalina wine mixer, often was quoting, "Pauk! Pauk! Pauk!"
I wasn't sure where we were going with this.
Yeah,
one.
Neither
yes.
was I.
Yes.
I just like to say "Pauk."
Yes.
It's
who,
quite good to exclaim.
Yeah, but don't exclaim it too loudly or their chairman will pull a gun on you, which as Graham mentioned, was a thing. And like not, it really was. I remember watching that video, like the Zapruder film of him running onto the pitch and being like, oh no, yeah, there's just a gun tucked into his belt. That's not what you want to see. That's not a good look at all.
Yeah, not great. Anyway, Ben, hope that answers your question. One final one to get to today from Kyle K. The TSS crew has stumbled upon a prank time machine. That's a prank time machine joke.
Makes me
sounds
nervous.
Fun.
Mm.
Is that really the best use of that technology?
100% yes, it is.
Hang on, you haven't heard what its use is going to be yet. We've stumbled upon a prank time machine, Graham. It might be hot tub. It might be some other kind of vessel. We don't know. this prank time machine allows you to go back in time and mess with someone for a few minutes for laughs.
Okay so it is what, yeah, it is what it sounds like. Yeah, that's confirmed.
So we can go back and mess with someone for laughs, but it has no actual effect on the real timeline of life. Interesting. Joe, Graham, and Taylor decide to be trolls and send Giorgio Chiellini back to horse collar Ryan at three different points in his life, Bukayo Saka style. What moments would each of you choose? What does Ryan do with his one trip in revenge for this instant? Firstly, I'll go first here. I'll ask, why am I being horse-collared? What did I do to deserve this prank? But
you know what you did.
Okay, that's fair. I do. I'll say revenge isn't my star. I'm a lover, not a fighter. So what I would do for all of you guys, I'll put you in my prank time machine.
You're doing the revenge first? I just want to be clear. Okay, all right, cool. Cool.
That's not really how revenge works.
Yeah, not quite, but
preemptive revenge. All right, fine. Graham, what would you do?
So I think we now understand why Ryan fell in that video of him in the dad's race at his daughter's sports day. That was one of those occasions, wasn't it? It was Chiellini horse collaring him.
Graham, what happened? Okay, talk us through it very slowly.
Ryan run, Ryan fall.
Oh,
everyone laughed.
Overtaken by happened. Child in lion suit.
So yeah, now we have an explanation for what happened there. It was this prank time machine. It was Giorgio Chiellini. That's what happened.
True.
But yeah, I would definitely get Chiellini to horse collar Ryan at the line in Starbucks, because funny. Also walking out onto stage at the TSS World Cup live show. I might actually book Chiellini for our next live show. Hello, Giorgio. See what you did to Saka. Yeah, fancy doing it again to another Englishman? Yeah, I'm sure he'll be up for that booking. I feel like two horse collarings is enough, Ryan. I don't want to wear out the slapstick effect. I guess you already had that one at the sports day, so that's my three.
All right, thank you. And yeah, I've only got so much wear out of these collars that I'm wearing right now, so I appreciate you not putting too much on them. Joe, what would you do with the prank time machine?
So I completely misread this question until Ryan just let it out.
I did too.
So I'm pranking each one of you, and I also came up with two ways to prank Ryan as Graham was talking. So one is very similar to Graham. You said something about Starbucks, Graham. I'd like Chiellini to horse collar Ryan the first time he steps into a Chili's. Maybe that will be like this moment where he realizes, my life doesn't have to be this way, even though Kyle tells us that it's going to have no impact whatsoever on his actual life and day-to-day actions. So I don't think it's going to work, but I do think it's worth a shot. The other one is the wedding day. Just try to pick the biggest moment possible. There's like a very clear
I
aisle.
I thought that as well, but
you're like very
no,
visible.
That's too harsh.
You guys are ruthless.
I don't know what your wedding was, but I mean, come on, it would be funny, right? Ryan's a funny guy. Everybody loves Ryan. I don't think I've ever met someone who doesn't like you, Ryan, and we all like you despite poking fun at you. Like, come on, I think that would be funny, and it would have made that day even more memorable for those in attendance, even if they would forget. So, I'm confused at this whole prank machine. I don't understand how this works at all. Go ahead, Ryan.
We've all done a wedding, Joe. Where am I being horse collared? While I'm at the altar, while my wife's coming down the aisle?
No. Did you not like walk up the aisle sort of before she came down the aisle? Like maybe like before everyone else? I don't know if you have groomsmen or anything like that. Were you not first down?
No.
How did you enter? Where did you come from?
I must have had to walk at some point, but it wasn't part of the ceremony, right?
Look, I'm just going to take it there. I feel like maybe it's the wedding night. That's when Kaylee's coming in for the horse collar.
I don't know the inner mechanics of what that day looked like for you, Ryan, but I'm open to any and all ideas. Can I share? Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I got married on a beach, so I didn't actually walk down an aisle. I just walked over.
Great. Well, you're in a
beach.
Public space, so that's going to be even better for me.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So my way is to prank all of you. Again, not realizing that this wouldn't have an effect on the timeline. That like really doesn't make sense to my brain and really messes with my predictions. But I want to go back to the TSS live show, like Graham said, and replace all of Ryan's guitar strings with yarn just before he goes out on stage, just to kind of see what happens. I don't know. Could be fun. I want to replace all of Taylor's Liquid Death with Red Bull and see how fast he talks at the end of every show. I think that would be some good podcast content right there. And I want to go back
and see how quickly my heart explodes. Thanks, Joe.
Yep. Well, you know, we'll keep it in a medical allowed sort of level. And the last one for Graham, I want to go back in time to make sure that other, I don't remember who it was, but that other famous Sterling Albion fan is not a Sterling Albion fan, so that Graham can be the most famous one, because that will make him uncomfortable.
Wow.
That's right. That will make me uncomfortable, actually. Yep. I was joyful, and now I'm uncomfortable.
Yep.
Ryan looks so sad.
point of order, is Liquid Death better than Red Bull?
It's just water. Liquid Death is just water. It's just sparkling water. That's all it is.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yep. I see.
I should have clarified. Yes. My bad.
Thank you.
Just nerdily named. I also misread this question, but I thought it was we each get one prank on Ryan. So Graham gets one, Joe gets one. And I took mine in a different direction. So you all have done your going into the past pranking. I'm just flipping the dial on the time travel device. And now I'm going into the future. Because at this point, Ryan thinks he's safe. He's secure. There's no more horse collaring to be done. He's back in the United States. He's moved back to North Carolina. It's his first meal at Chili's after moving back to the United States. He orders. He rubs his hands together with glee. The waiter approaches. Platter of food held aloft. There they are. The poppin' fried honey jalapeno fried chicken poppers, all in their resplendent glory. And then Chiellini appears to horse collar the waiter. You didn't see that one coming. Food goes everywhere. Ryan looks at his entree, lying broken on the floor. Lifts his head to see Chiellini just staring at him, gives him a Mutombo, and then walks away as Ryan is just left there to mourn his meal and scene.
Still eating it.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
Five-second rule.
Attaboy.
Well, if anything, this exercise has shown what a one-dimensional character I am.
To be fair, you started this by gleefully talking about the Hard Rock Cafe, so I'm going to say that's on you. And also, I believe talking about Starbucks, also on you.
I thought Ryan, you were going to say that it shows how bad Taylor and I are at reading comprehension, but yeah, I'm more of a fan of what you said instead.
I like how we just did what we wanted with this time machine. I feel like it needs regulated in some way.
That's a prank in itself, I suppose. My prank would be to go back to 10 minutes ago and have Taylor and Joe properly read the question. That'll be my first point of order with the time machine.
What's your revenge?
The idea of revenge, yeah, as I say, I'm not a revenge guy. I don't think I'm that way wired. So what I would do, I would put you, all three of you, in a time machine with me, and we go back to April 2010, and the best vacation I ever had, which was in Honolulu, Hawaii. Wonderful place. Stayed at the Hilton on the beach where Elvis used to do his thing. Sounds amazing, right, Joe? Does that sound good?
Yeah, it sounds good. I'm down.
Yeah, there you go.
Boys trip?
Boys trip. But also, that trip was when I first had Cheesecake Factory.
There it is.
Chili's, California Pizza Kitchen, and Outback. That trip's my origin story. So I'll have you all be there, and then you'd all be hooked on those one-dimensional things I love as well. End scene. Taylor, thank you.
You went to Hawaii, and that was your diet in Hawaii.
What would you eat?
Like
not
poke?
Everything from a straight mall. That's my answer to that question.
Isn't Hawaii, like, you know, really good poke and, like, seafood and stuff like that?
I don't know. What would I know?
Ryan, were you called a howley a bunch while you were there, just out of curiosity? Just wondering.
In my defense, like, the Cheesecake Factory there is the best one in the world. It's got, like, it's on the seafront, on the beachfront. It's got, like, the tiki torches everywhere. It's glorious. And it was my first experience of American middle-class fancy casual dining, and I've been hooked ever since. So there you go. And you'd be there. You'd be there, Taylor. You'd be there in my prank time machine.
Okay, I have some questions. Like, so this is the first time you had Cheesecake Factory?
Yes.
In Hawaii. We're going to just steamroll right past that because it's too much. But, like, was it your idea to go? Were you like, this Cheesecake Factory, that do they make? Is it a factory of cheesecakes? Was it your wife who went? Did the concierge recommend it? What was the situation?
It was my ex-girlfriend, who is now my wife. It was her who brought me to the Cheesecake Factory for the first time because she'd been previously.
She's the villain of the origin. She'd been previously. Who with, Ryan? Who with?
She was
Giorgio Chiellini.
Oh, yeah. It was. The time machine don't lie. Oh my gosh! On that bombshell.
Giorgio Chiellini's never eaten in a Cheesecake Factory, has he?
No shot.
I can imagine him throwing some bread rolls at someone in the Cheesecake Factory.
No way.
Oh Ryan. You went to Hawaii and you ate.
Not to derail this. Ryan has 1,000% told at least the four of us, like the three of us, this before.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was on the show or not, but I know this story. Like, I remember this. This is in my brain somewhere. It just brought it back, Ryan. I don't know when you spilled the beans, but it's in here. I've got it. I've heard it before.
I think it's one of those things that it's so difficult for me to comprehend that it's just easier to forget it. And then when it comes back, it doesn't get any easier to comprehend.
Ah, that's right. It's why you all love me, and I'll never change. On that note, Cryo K, thank you very much for that question. Listen, let us know what you do with a prank time machine. And if you're on a Discord on our Patreon, you know, have at it. Have some fun. In the meantime, Taylor Rockwell, thank you very much for your contributions to this here podcast.
Thank you, my friend.
Graham Rutherford, pleasure as always. You look splendid in your Inter Miami jersey today.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey. Go Miami.
Indeed. And Joe Lowry, shoulders back, chin high. Go smash the rest of the day. Thank you, Joseph.
Oh, wow. Right back at you, Ryan. That was motivating. I like it.
I know. New me. And listener, thank you very much indeed. We'll be back on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye.